Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans and their families thrive in their civilian career. Today is episode number 281 with Lockheed Martin's Chuck Hollingsworth.
I would just like to encourage them to know that you have more to offer than you may think, and to think deeply about that, to be encouraged in that. It's just like a fish swimming in water. You don't understand the water you're in. But I'm here to tell you now, with a few years on the other side, that you have a significant value to offer any company. This is just about finding the right fit. So first of all, don't be discouraged. If you go through a couple where the fit wasn't right, that's okay. If it wasn't right, it's better for you and them to move on and find the better fit.
After a 30-year Navy career, Chuck made his transition into the corporate world. We talk about what that transition was like and how leadership differs inside of the military versus outside the military. We talk about his role in corporate strategy and business development at Lockheed Martin and how the collateral jobs we do in the military may play a bigger role in our career choice than we often realize. We talk about the breadth of skills veterans bring to their employers and how to communicate this in interviews. We also take a detailed look at the incredible breadth of opportunities at Lockheed Martin and what they're doing to support the military community. Lockheed Martin employs over 22,000 veterans, and just last year, in 2018, they had over 19,000 connections with veterans, with 170 events and 3,500 veterans hired in just 1 year. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find links in the show notes for this episode to all the resources we discuss, as well as a whole host of information about Chuck. He's got an incredibly impressive background. Special thanks to all of those of you who follow the link in the show notes to leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts and iTunes. Special thanks to Ked267, who wrote, "I'm transitioning out of the military this summer after spending the past 6 years in the Coast Guard. I wish I had found this podcast sooner. It's an absolute goldmine of practical advice and knowledge. Thank you, Justin, for all that you do." Thank you, Ked267, and all of those of you who have left positive reviews on iTunes. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Chuck. Well, joining me today in Rockville, Maryland, my guest is Chuck Hollingsworth. Chuck, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks, Justin. It's good to be with you.
So for listeners, this is a very abbreviated bio, but there's a lot of links for Chuck in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org for this episode. Chuck is part of Lockheed Martin's Corporate Strategy and Business Development Group, where he focuses on strategic customer relationship development, corporate orders growth, and focus programs, and several functional development courses, such as the Doing Business Overseas Institute. He started out, like me, at the United States Naval Academy, after which he served as an officer in the Navy for over 30 years. This includes serving as Chief of Staff to the Chief of Naval Air Training, with oversight of all undergraduate Navy flight training, as well as the Navy flight demonstration team, the Blue Angels. It also includes being a responder to support in the aftermath of the USS Cole attack. It includes being, immediately after 9/11, dispatched to Islamabad, Pakistan, where, at the Pakistan government's request, he served as the principal U.S. military liaison to coordinate combat operations through Pakistan into Afghanistan. Chuck has worked at Lockheed Martin for over 5 years. So Chuck, maybe to kick things off, could you walk us through, I mean, you had a very full, very rich career in the Navy. And then at the end of that 30-year period, what was the job search like and what ultimately led you to Lockheed Martin?
Yeah, great question. I tell you, you're right. It was a wonderful career. I felt fortunate to have had it. But it all comes to an end, right? For everybody, at some point, you get to that time, that day. And for me, it was really about trying to initially scope the problem, right? Because you get to that point in your career, you feel like there's so many options out there, commercial, aerospace and defense, consulting, your small business. And for me, it was a series of steps beginning to scope that down. I decided that I really enjoyed being involved in the aerospace and defense industry. And so that was really the first step, scoping it down to that, that I would be interested in trying to continue to serve in a way to be involved in the industry that I felt like was supporting the men and women on the front lines. So once I made that decision, that clarified the space quite a bit. I was able to focus to a handful of companies. And from there, it really became about, as we all hear, the networking, the calling up those friends that you know that are out there. I think one of my biggest lessons learned from that is that you got to let people know. You got to let people know you're ready. You got to let people know about your timing and that what you're interested in, because there's people out there willing to help. But even your good friends don't know exactly what your timing is, right? And so I called up some friends. I called up some former bosses. It turned out a couple of them worked for Lockheed Martin. They were interested in helping me find a way to get an interview. And it all flowed from there.
That's great. And I just want to call out two things for listeners. First of all, I love how you started by scoping out. I want to remind listeners the power of saying no. And I think that oftentimes we as veterans approach this as, I'll do anything, I'll go anywhere, I'll be a jack of all trades. That actually makes the job harder. And the power of Chuck taking the time to do that heavy lifting, that soul searching to figure out and narrow down the scope of what he was looking at, made this process infinitely easier for him. And then the other thing I love about what you said is you got to let people know. And I think that that can be uncomfortable for us as veterans, but the power of taking the time to figure out what you want and then sharing that with people when you're in conversation, letting them know that you're leaving the military, what you're thinking of, what you're looking for, and in many ways as possible, getting that word out there. Because one of the trends I've seen in these interviews is often that first job comes from a friend of a friend or someone who knows someone else, and they're not going to be able to make that connection if you don't, as Chuck said, let people know what you're doing and what you're thinking about. So I love that that you called that out, Chuck.
Right. And to me, one of the most freeing elements or tips that I was given early on, because you're right, we're not that great. We come from a service that values humility, right? So a lot of times we're not that great at selling ourselves and a little uncomfortable with some of those initial calls. But the idea that you can free yourself up to just have informational interviews, right? Informational discussions. I'm not asking you for a job. I just want to pick your brain on your own transition, mm-hmm. what it is you're doing. I'm trying to learn to help me understand the kaleidoscope of jobs that are out there. So I want to talk to you about yours. That is easier to do, right? And you can have those conversations. And it's just the nature of relationships that, you know, I think one out of three or four of those conversations is going to lead to something else. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, you know what? You've made me think of something. Let me connect you to so-and-so because I think they're looking. And so to me, the idea of the informational interview was key.
I think that's great. And I hope that listeners who have listened to a couple episodes, that's what we're trying to role model on the show. And hopefully you can see, I mean, let's say even for this conversation with Chuck, it took reaching out, getting on his schedule, took 15, 20 minutes of looking at his background, preparing in advance, thinking of what I wanted to ask about, and then being present in a conversation and just making it a conversation. I hope that that's very accessible for listeners. That's all these informational interviews are. It's connecting with someone, asking some questions, doing a little bit of homework beforehand, and that's it. And it's a numbers game. Just doing that, at the very least, you're going to learn a lot, but that's also how you start to expand your network. And as Chuck said, you might, you know, find someone who knows someone who needs someone like you, and you never know where this leads.
That's right. That's right.
What about before we go too much further, so you work in Lockheed's corporate strategy and business development department. If you were to bump into someone who's currently on active duty and they said, hey, Chuck, what do you do for a living? How do you explain to them your role and what sort of things that you do?
But for me, I would liken being here at corporate headquarters for Lockheed is not unlike being at the Pentagon on the major staff of a service, right? Because I'm not down within the tactical business areas that are actually doing the building and selling. I have a more of a overreach type position here. Of course, corporate strategy and business development are ultimately about orders and sales for the company. But my personal role happens to be more about the professional development of the business development force. So I sit here at a headquarters function. I look out at about 1,500 or so of folks that are in the BD, the business development world, and I'm looking at how I can better facilitate their own professional development and be better in their role. So it's interesting. It's not unlike some of the roles that I had in the Navy. In fact, my last role in the Navy there as the Chief of Staff of Aviation Training. That's what I was doing, right? I was getting the aircraft, the tools and equipment for people to get through flight school and pin wings on their chest. So in a way, I'm in a parallel to that, but it just happens to be in a corporate environment.
That's great. And I hope for listeners, you realize, I mean, you should look in the show notes and it was difficult to trim down Chuck's bio to a quick soundbite at the start, but if you look at his background, you'll see in a 30-year career, he did so many different aspects within the military. And what it sounds like what you found, Chuck, it's taking one piece of that service. It's not like this is dealing with ships. It's not like it's dealing with planes. It's not like it's directly dealing with a lot of what his experience was in the military. And a good portion of his experience included training, educating, supporting, and that's what he's doing now in the civilian sector. And sometimes I just want to call this out because sometimes I feel like listeners feel like I did X in the military, I need to do X outside of the military. And what you said, Chuck, it's a great reminder to listeners that we in the military, we do so many different things. And to be able to recognize that, like, hey, you know, leading a group of 1,500 business development professionals, that's a massive undertaking. That's not something that Chuck would have done, been able to do straight out of the Naval Academy. That was building blocks to get there and increasing the amount of oversight he had in the military to now that he can leverage that skill in a civilian context. He's teaching something very different than he taught in the military, but I'm imagining, Chuck, you're using a lot of the skills that you developed in the military to bring that to bear into that role.
No, you're exactly right. Sometimes I think we veterans, we don't even capture the breadth of what it is that the military has given us. And you're exactly right. For me, believe it or not, when I came up to interview for this job, it was a blind interview. I didn't know the position that I was interviewing for. They just wanted to talk. It was through the course of the conversation that I could begin to tell what it was that they were looking for. And so a little bit of thinking on your feet here, but I was able to link it back to some things. Specifically, not only the last command, but another command I'd had in the Navy that was about professional development. And so that's where the conversation went, right? You're right. It didn't go to flying P-3s all over the world, chasing Russian submarines. In this case, it wound up being about developing people and leadership and some soft skill development. And it turned out that was the perfect fit for that particular discussion.
That I think it's great that you're explicit on that too, that we as vets often don't know that breadth of experience that we have. And I found this last week, I was doing a consulting project where I was referencing something I did on submarines that was not my mainline responsibility. It was a little side project that my captain gave me to solve a problem. And I was able to use that story with this client to talk about product management, which is not what I thought of when I was on submarines. So I love what you're saying. And what I encourage listeners to do is to take that inventory of just think of all the things, the projects you had, all the different assignments you had in the military, just to get a sense of what you've done. And I think that, as Chuck's saying, you'll be surprised at the breadth of things that you've done beyond what, you know, you might associate yourself with in a specific role, in a specific assignment in the military.
Well said. In fact, I would drill down on that to the point that what you may forget as that collateral duty, I mean, it literally could have been a short-term collateral duty. That collateral duty could get you a job. Mm. So it's just, it is definitely, I love what you're saying there, Justin, about really sit down. You almost have to go tour by tour, mm-hmm. right? And really think about, oh, yeah, I got it. I was a safety officer. I was a logistics officer. What were all the things you did on the fringe? At least have mentally, intellectually refreshed yourself on them so that if the opportunity presents itself, you can go there and articulate it.
And you know, the situation you were in with this blind interview, that's kind of the PhD level of interviews, because in that environment, when Chuck, you know, did not know what they were looking for. And so he had to have this mental Rolodex of stories, of experiences, that as it starts to dawn on him, oh, they're looking for this. Okay, great. I've got in my little toolkit here, I've got three or four stories that relate to that. But the only way to be able to do that and be versatile like Chuck was in that interview is to have them on standby to know, hey, these are the precise things that I did. This is how I would explain it. And that's really awesome. While we're on the point of breadth, Lockheed Martin is a company with a tremendous breadth. And I'm just wondering, at a high level, could you walk listeners through the different divisions? You know, from an outsider's perspective, I see aeronautical systems, missiles, space, electronic systems, marine systems, yeah. Information systems. Can you give us kind of the lay of the land?
Yeah, just for our veteran listeners to know, because if you're like me in my career, I flew a Lockheed Martin aircraft. And so that's really all I knew of Lockheed was airplanes. I get here and I find out, so yes, we have aeronautics, which is obviously involved in aviation. We have four broad mission business areas, we call them. So aeronautics is one. Rotary and Mission Systems is the current name of one of the others, which, by the way, Sikorsky is now a part of. As it sounds, a lot to do with helicopters, a lot to do with mission systems around things like the Aegis system, combat system on ships. And we actually work combat systems for all the different services. So wherever you are, I'm betting that we have mission systems somewhere involved there with your system. We have a business area called Missiles and Fire Control, which that name is pretty self-explanatory. But when you think some of the THAAD and other, from the tactical to the strategic, we are involved in all types of missile systems and other sensors. And then the fourth business area is space. And this was new to me when I joined Lockheed. I didn't know how involved we were in satellite technology, and a lot of it is in the classified realm. We are hugely, hugely involved with all the services and all the three-letter agencies when it comes to space-based products and services. So that's the big picture, those four areas. And I'll tell you, Justin, we are at over 375 locations across the United States and the world. So almost anywhere you are, we probably have some kind of footprint there. Mm.
And I think it's great that you point that out, because I imagine most listeners know Lockheed from one very specific vantage point. And then to recognize, I mean, this is a massive global enterprise with multiple facets and so many extensions of every technology and application and partner. And so to realize that, what for listeners that think that they know a lot about this company, to realize that there is, you know, it is likely you are seeing the tip of the iceberg, and there's tremendous opportunities and experiences underneath that. In the Could you talk about, you're also the chair of Lockheed Martin's Military Veterans Employee Resource Group, or the MILVET ERG, ERG. Could you talk about what that is and how you support veterans?
Sure. This is one of those collateral duties, right? We were talking about something I do on the side, but I'm pretty passionate about it. Lockheed has over 22,000 veterans as a part of our workforce, and so our corporation has these employee resource groups, ERGs, around. We have seven of them, and you can think of them as typically around what would be some of the elements of protected workforce minorities and that sort of thing. But we happen to have one for military veterans. And when I learned about that, because I didn't know that when I got here, and as I learned about the organization and found they needed some volunteers to be in leadership positions, I raised my hand because this is a way, coming into a big corporation like Lockheed Martin, that you can find that sense of community that so many of us miss. When people ask me, what do you miss most about the service? Mm-hmm. Right? That's usually the answer, is you miss that sense of community and camaraderie. Well, having an employee resource group provides that. We do an annual leadership conference once a year. I just wrapped it up. It was the first and second part of May. We do May because that's Military Appreciation Month. Mm-hmm. And we have the opportunity to bring in some key great speakers, a Medal of Honor recipient. We do things like honor the 75th anniversary of D-Day that's coming up, and had some D-Day veterans come in as special guests, which was really neat. And then we always provide some professional development opportunities for the people that come in for the conference. And that will be on things like executive presence or soft skills and presentation skills and that sort of thing. So that's what the ERG does writ large. It helps people find us, get to us, and then our theme this year says it all. It was no one left behind. Hmm. And that the heartbeat of that theme is just that we want to help the veterans that join Lockheed Martin have a better experience with their transition into the corporate world, so that they choose to stay with us instead of moving on to another job.
I think that's incredible. 22,000 veterans. And for me, you know, I love that you called out like that community and missing that from the military. That is, by and large, one of the most consistent things I hear in these interviews. And so joining a company that has that large of a contingent of veterans, you can maintain that community. And it means that the employer knows the value you bring. They know how to train you, how to educate you, how to help you. There's a tremendous knowledge that the institution has because they've worked with so many veterans. You are not this new entity that they're figuring out how to integrate, how to work with, how to understand their background. I think that those are all benefits there. It's also incredible because I've seen that the MILVET ERG has partnered with American Corporate Partners. Colleen Deere was recently on the show. IVMF, we've done multiple interviews with them. And you have also done incredible philanthropic work. Back in 2018, I believe you gave over $9 million. Could you talk a little bit more about those partnerships and the philanthropic efforts that you do?
Yeah, one of the neat things I like about Lockheed is our choice of philanthropies that we're going to support. And we actually, again, as a corporation, we've strategically decided to focus on two areas. One is STEM, for obvious reasons, being an engineering company. And then the other are military and veterans. And so those are actually the only two areas of philanthropies that we support. And so in the military veterans area, of course, huge supporters of, as you mentioned, American Corporate Partners. I've been a mentor with them now for 5 years, and I just love that engagement. Because, by the way, to me, when you're an ACP mentor, one of the things it's demonstrating is that value of service and giving back that so many veterans have, right? Because I am not mentoring individuals to come to Lockheed. I'm mentoring individuals just to transition successfully on whatever it is they're looking for, right? Whether that's a consulting, a small business, or to a bank, whatever. So huge supporters of ACP, the USO, a lot of the Wounded Warrior organizations. It is the heartbeat of what we do here at Lockheed. And when we say, you know, we never forget who we're working for, I think we do a good job of that. And I feel like one of my roles here is to make sure we don't, because we get managers that come from all over. So some managers are very attuned to veteran and military and what it is we bring. But then we also get managers that come in from other industries, right? And so a part of what we do is help educate them so they understand the value of what it is they're getting in a veteran. If they're not familiar with it, then we feel like we have a responsibility to help them understand.
That's great. And for listeners, I'll add in the show notes links to the two interviews we've done with American Corporate Partners. It is one of the more referenced resources that we've talked about on the show or that guests have brought up on the show. And I appreciate your bringing up that distinction is when you work with a mentor, whether it's through ACP or someplace else, they are looking out for your best interest. This is not about selling you on that person's background. It's instead leveraging 30 years of someone like Chuck's experience in the military, 5 years of his experience at an incredible company, and through that vantage point to be a sounding board, to give advice, to potentially make introductions, to assist you in thinking through what's right for you, which is different than what's right for me. It's different than what's right for Chuck. It's really about getting to know you. And I imagine Chuck, having done this for 5 years, so much of what you did in the military, I'm guessing too, was mentorship. You're adept at understanding what makes someone tick, what their unique aspirations are, and then helping them think through the ways to get there. I think that's very powerful. And it's also wild to think that as large of an organization as Lockheed Martin is, like the two main tenets are around STEM and around the military veteran community. And that's awesome to see the might of an organization like that really laser focused on those two aspects.
Yeah, it is a happy privilege for me that it works out that way. I came to this company really two reasons initially. One, because they had a great reputation for their ethic. I come out of, the Navy, where honor, courage, and commitment are the core values, and I found that this company has very similar values. And then the other reason I came initially here was because of the breadth of the company, because I assumed, and I think it was a good assumption, that if my first job was not the perfect fit, that there's enough breadth there that I could move, mm-hmm. right, and that I could go somewhere else and find that job that may be even a better fit. Well, so far I've been happy with the role I came into, but that is one thing that the ERG does, is sometimes we'll find folks that got in, found that first job, but maybe that first, maybe they're looking for more people interaction than sitting looking at spreadsheets, right? Mm-hmm. Right, depending on what that initial job may have been. And so one of the things I like doing, and I'm prompting our ERG to do, is to help people find that what could be the second job, but the second job within our company.
That's great.
It may be a better fit.
I think that's something for listeners to note as well. And especially, I've been on the opposite end of that, where running a startup, I've had multiple times a conversation with an employee saying, hey, I understand that you do X and that now you want to do Y. We are a 20-person company. We don't do Y. Like, you don't have that room to expand. We have a very precise need. And if you work at a larger organization like Lockheed Martin, they have that flexibility. I know we started the interview going through this laundry list of different aspects of their company, and there's functional areas to support every single one of those, which means that as you grow, as you learn more about what you like and dislike, you can move within the organization rather than having to start the process all over again of finding a new company to work for. That's a very, very big advantage. And one thing I wanted to ask is that if someone listening is interested in learning more about Lockheed Martin and a career there, what advice do you have for them, and in what way could they engage with the MILVET ERG to learn more?
Yeah, that's good. If you go to LockheedMartin.com, we have an incredible military relations team. And we've got a handful, four or five folks. They divide up the country in regions, military relations managers, we call them. And so if you go to our website and go to under the careers tab, you'll actually see a sub tab around military. I think it's called Military Connect. And if you go to that Military Connect tab, it will actually put you in touch with our military, with our MRMs, our military relations managers. And I'll give you some of their numbers blow me away, Justin. They had contact with over 19,000 veterans last year. Last year, 19,000 contacts, 170 different events around the country. And we hired over 3,500. We hired over 3,500 veterans in 2018. So it's a great team. Go to them. The fact that you are a veteran essentially gives you an HOV lane into the company. So I encourage you, use that part of the website. Go to that. Don't just go into the regular career tab and looking through hundreds of recs. Go to the Military Connect team and let them help you. Translate. In fact, we actually have a skills translator right on our website. I know there's many out there now, including I think Google has a service that helps, but we have our own as a part of that. Let us help you translate your veteran skills into what that means for Lockheed. One of the things they just started, which I really appreciate as a hiring manager myself, is as they go out to these sites, they're scrubbing. They're helping making that translation of the member's resume. And they now have a service. This is internal to the managers where I can opt in. Let's say I'm interested in specifically cyber. I can opt in to our military relations team and say, yep, send me, I don't want to see all your resumes. Send me your resumes only around cyber, which is just a huge help to managers, as you can imagine, just begin to winnow down that huge funnel of talent that's out there.
That's awesome. And it's incredible just in the 2018 numbers alone to see the exposure that you have to the military community. That's really, really incredible. What about, you've commanded the Navy Center for Personal and Professional Development. I'd love to learn, you know, especially considering your longstanding and successful naval career, how does leadership, how have you found that leadership differs in uniform versus outside of the military or at Lockheed Martin in particular?
That's a great and thoughtful question, Justin. I will tell you, being the CEO of, as you said, the CPPD, the Center for Personal and Professional Development, it gave me the opportunity to think deeply about leadership, right? You always do in the military. But I actually wound up with a tour of the Navy where my day job was to think about leadership. And I was basically in charge of it from E1 to 06. So the leadership strand from E1 to 06, the flag officers have a separate program. Transitioning into Lockheed Martin, one of the things I was looking for and was happy to find that they do have a robust leadership development program. They have leadership tenets that are woven into leadership and managerial professional development, which I appreciated. I provide input into that process all the time here just because I'm passionate about it. I would say for the most part, that there are some stylistic differences, right? There is probably more consensus building in the corporate world. Again, depending on where you are in the organization, but team building, you know, a lot of people, I think, assume, I think incorrectly, that military veterans, that it's all authoritative leadership, right? And that we don't know how to build teams, which I know better, right? That's absolutely not correct. We have a lot of team building that goes on out there in the military. And that that experience is incredibly valuable in the corporate world. And you should talk about it. In fact, I would say in your interview, if you somehow weave, if leadership comes up, if you can weave that into the fact and almost intentionally dispel sometimes some of these predetermined values that some people have, that authoritative leadership, you thump people in the chest and tell them what to do, and everybody salutes and goes off and says yes sir. Well, we know better, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes we need to talk about that and actually elaborate on the skills that you as a veteran have developed around that, because that is such a valuable asset. It's a direct parallel corollary to the corporate world.
I think, man, I'm so glad that you hit on that. I think that that is such great advice too. I think that you uncovered one of the misperceptions often in civilian hiring managers, and that is that the military is a authoritarian, like, oh, leadership, you just tell someone to do it and they do it, which everyone listening is not the way that it works. But I love your thought of how to approach this in an art of war fashion of understanding your enemy, understanding their misconception, and skillfully showing them, not telling them, demonstrating to them the counterpoint to that. Like, I might borrow from my submarine days, I might tell a story of a time I was in a leadership position and one of my junior electrical operators, you know, noticed something that I didn't, or found something that I was doing wrong and pointed that out, or how I asked him for his opinion and that shifted my thinking. And all of those are illustrating, oh, this is not a senior person giving a junior person a command and it happening. This is more collaborative. Or I might think of with my division, a way that we work together and different people contributed in different ways. All of these are true. I think every listener will have dozens of these stories, but really practicing that story so you can tell it, so that you can illustrate, you can paint the picture for the listener, for that hiring manager, of the military is not about just pushing a button and robots go do it. It is about selling that job. It's about leading. It's about motivating. It's about working with people where they're at. There's so much more to it that they may not understand. So I think it's great that you called that out.
And then the idea that we can, I love your Sun Tzu illustration there, because it is very strategic to think about, because you know the sorts of questions. We all know so tell me a time about this, tell me a time about that in your interview. Hey, use that opportunity to not only answer the question, but do so with a story that is educating them on something you want to educate them on, about you, about the service, the fact that you understand team building, the fact that I was very involved in the Navy's sexual assault prevention program, right? Mm-hmm. And so again, if people have this myth that, okay, we're knuckle dragging gorillas that you know that don't understand some of the sensitivities of the corporate workplace, not true. Yep. Right? And so let me tell you about my involvement in trying to make the Navy a better workplace for both men and women. So mm-hmm. So every one of those, it's all about being prepared with, I don't know, hundreds maybe of vignettes that you are then ready to tee up to both answer a question and tell a story.
Mm, I love that. I love vignettes. That's such a great, that's so applicable. I think it was Henry Kissinger who in a press conference said, does anyone have any questions for my answers? And I think of that in the interview context. It really is putting in the reps leading up to the interview to have these vignettes prepared, to know what types of questions they would apply to. And then it's just sitting back. And as the interviewer asks a question, you're just choosing that vignette that best illustrates the point. And I love your example too of heading the program around sexual assault prevention. I think another false perception of veterans is that they may be unempathetic or not sympathetic. And so finding experiences from your past that illustrate the counterpoint. Maybe you do volunteering, maybe you're involved with a church group, maybe you're involved in some way where you can show empathy, where you can dispel that myth. Yes, I understand underneath you expect me to not have a heart. Well, let me illustrate that with a few stories that show that, or maybe just have that be a component of stories that show that you're an empathetic leader. I always like to ask about resources. And by that, I just mean like books, podcasts, conferences, anything that's helped you in your career that you would recommend to listeners. And I'm wondering if there's any resources that are top of mind that I could add to our show notes.
I tell you, there is a, there's a guy I actually teach with here in a customer relations class that has a podcast out there on communication. It's called The Communication Guys. I think it's communicationguys.com. Guy named Dr. Tom Barrett, brilliant communicator. He's actually a clinical psychologist by training, but now he spends all his time in customer relationship and communication. But I find that a very helpful tip to veterans, and that is this whole idea of just being able to articulate things, communicate things, build relationships with people. Some of the soft skills that we're talking about. So it's a podcast. Go out there. They're all 30-minute podcasts, sort of like you do, Justin. And I know as we are looking for ways that you can listen in the car and that sort of thing, there's a resource. Another area, not so much by title. I think I have one around here. But the idea of executive presence, there's multiple books out there on that. That is an area that I'm doing a lot of coaching in within Lockheed Martin. There's a huge demand for it. And I would say, the one thing that veterans bring in the room, most veterans bring a sense of, wow, you can tell when this man or woman walks in, you can sort of get the sense of the experience they have with them, right, that walked in the room. But there are still some things around executive presence that we can polish. And this is everything from look and dress to how you answer questions and how you interact in a room. So those are areas that I think are worth, just from a personal development perspective. I encourage people to put those on your list as you're just stretching yourself and you're growing a little bit, because those are areas that are very applicable to your next career.
That's great. I love that too. I get the sense that it's almost like you've got this gem, that most people in the military have this executive presence, and it's putting in the time to refine that and polish that, to find resources like those books to kind of figure out how to take a strength and make it even stronger. Well, I know that we're at the end of our time, but I always like to leave the last question open-ended. And that could be either, what have we not covered that you want to make sure you share with listeners, or what are some final words of wisdom that you'd like to depart with listeners before we wrap up?
I would just like to encourage your listeners. First of all, Justin, thank you for what you do out there to help our veterans navigate this transition process. I would just like to encourage them to know that you have more to offer than you may think, and to think deeply about that, to be encouraged in that. It's just like a fish swimming in water. You don't even see, you don't understand the water you're in. Mm-hmm. But I'm here to tell you now, with a few years on the other side, that you have a significant value to offer any company. This is just about finding the right fit. So first of all, don't be discouraged. If you go through a couple where the fit wasn't right, that's okay. If it wasn't right, it's better for you and them to move on and find the better fit. I would encourage people not to move too quickly on that first offer. I think that's it's a common practice out there. I call it the bird in the hand syndrome. There's an offer, I'm going to take it. I know it's an anxious time. But try to slow down. Try to get a couple of offers on the table, because it is about fit. And if you're looking at multiple offers, it's going to help you, I think, in that decision making process a little bit more. And then the last thing I would say is that one thing that I think all veterans have is a sense of purpose with the things that we have done. Whether you did it 5 years or 30 years, you served your country with a sense of purpose. Keep that in mind as you're looking for that next job. That's a part of fit. But then also remember that your sense of purpose doesn't have to be 100% in that job anymore. Mm-hmm. I volunteered with multiple other nonprofits, and quite honestly, that's where I still get a lot of my energy. And so just remember the full balance of life, and that you can get a part of your sense of purpose from the job, 9 to 5, but you can also get a big sense of purpose from doing other things after 5. Mm-hmm. So those are just a couple of things I would leave people to think about.
Man, I think that those are all three spot on. And I love that. I love, you know, valuing one's what one has done. Like we did, like you said, we're in water. We don't necessarily realize all the skills, all the strengths that we bring to the table. And that, I think that leads in beautifully to your second point around not jumping at the first offer and just kind of giving it time. And I always kind of relate these back to my online dating days of like wanting everyone to be the fit for my long-term partner. And it's like, man, no, it's just literally, is this a good mutual fit? If not, no worries, on to the next one. And I love how you're applying that to the job search process of just really depressuring it, of finding that mutual fit. And yeah, I think that your advice is spot on. So Chuck, thank you so much for the work that you're doing to support our military veteran community. And thank you for taking the time to share your story with our audience.
Thank you, Justin. It was my pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with 2 of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.